Rainmaker FM.
This episode of Members Only is brought to you by Digital Commerce Summit. We'll tell you more about this amazing live event later in the show, but check out rainmaker.fm/summit for all the details. That's rainmaker.fm/summit.
Three, two.
And now, for Members Only, I'm your host, Sean Jackson. Negotiation. Seems scary, but negotiating is at the heart of everything we do in business and in life. Why? Because negotiating is a process of collaboration where two or more parties are trying to find a solution to a shared problem. Personally, I was uncomfortable with the whole concept of negotiation. So I bought a book, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating Like Your Life Depended on It, written by the former lead international kidnapping negotiator for the FBI. And I was blown away. Each chapter was filled with not only amazing stories, but detailed practical ideas on how to negotiate in any situation. Whether you're trying to buy a car, get a raise, dealing with clients and vendors, or even your kids or your spouse, or as in his case, kidnappers demanding a ransom. Hours I spent reading and rereading each chapter, taking a ton of notes on the types of questions to ask to lead the other party toward your solution. But after several hours, I was tired and put down the book and turned on the TV. And guess what was playing? Hostage, the 2005 movie starring Bruce Willis as a hostage negotiator. And as I watched Bruce's character go from one hostage situation to another, all I could think was this. That guy fucking sucks as a negotiator. In this episode of Members Only, we have a true master of negotiation join us as our guest. Chris Voss, the author of that book, Never Split the Difference, will be joining us to help you master the art of negotiating. So stay tuned after this short break.
Hey, Jared Morris here. If you know anything about Rainmaker Digital and Copyblogger, you may know that we produce incredible live events. Well, some would say that we produce incredible live events as an excuse to throw great parties, but that's another story. We've got another one coming up this October in Denver. It's called Digital Commerce Summit, and it is entirely focused on giving you the smartest ways to create and sell digital products and services. To get all the details and the very best deal on tickets, head over to rainmaker.fm/summit. That's rainmaker.fm/summit.
Welcome to Members Only, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Jackson, and I'm joined, as always, by the empathetic Jessica Frick. Jessica, how the frick are you today?
I'm great, Sean. How the Jackson are you?
You know, I am so excited about our guest today that I'm just going to shut up because I want you to introduce him. I want to get into this conversation with him. So Jess, introduce our very special guest today.
Sean, I got to say though, first, I have never seen you so excited about anything coming up before. This is great. I'm enjoying this. So today we have Chris Voss, who is the CEO of the Black Swan Group and author of national bestseller, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Chris is a 24-year veteran of the FBI and retired as their lead international kidnapping negotiator, which is super impressive. In addition to the FBI, Chris's experience draws from Harvard's program on negotiation, Scotland Yard, and the Kellogg School of Business.
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, guys, it's an absolute pleasure. And I suppose I have to ask you, how the Voss are you both?
We are Vossy well.
All right.
Hey, now, Chris, I do want to pay you and your co-author, Tal Roz, which, by the way, he has not only a cool name, but he's a great writer. I want to pay you both a compliment. I think Never Split the Difference is truly, truly a must-read business book. In the same category, I would place books from Adam Grant, who I adore, Malcolm Gladwell, etc. And the reason I say that is because not only do you have some great stories, which I would like you to share at the end of our show, so if our audience is listening, wait till the very end because he's got great story to tell, but I also was really inspired by the last chapter of your book where you point out the reason why you wrote it. So could you take a moment and share kind of the reasoning and the one thing that you really hoped the audience would know from reading your book? What do you hope it accomplishes?
Well, you know, negotiation can make our lives better. I mean, with just a little bit of effort, it can go from this battle that we are all concerned about to something that's actually kind of great. I mean, it makes it, it's a beautiful thing. It really is to collaborate with somebody else because there's, you know, as creatures on this planet, we're hardwired to collaborate. Otherwise, we still wouldn't be here. So it's about helping people get more comfortable with something that can make their lives better and make their personal relationships better and help them stop wasting so much time on a gerbil wheel of misunderstanding.
You know, you said something in the book that really stuck with me is that it's not personal. You're just trying to resolve a situation, right? The conflict is not like me against that guy or that girl. It's really just situational based, right?
Yeah, the adversary is the situation. I mean, if you're negotiating with someone, you're both being faced with a problem in the environment that you need each other's help to deal with. So, we need each other's help because the adversary is the situation. We got to cooperate to overcome it.
Gotcha. All right. So I want to get into some actual tactics now, because if there's one thing that I did with your book is I was taking copious amounts of notes, because the general you really over the years with the FBI created up a process, a flow, and it really was something that evolved over time. So I want to go through the process, how it evolved, where you found the first things that a skilled negotiator should do from the very beginning, and then how to lead to a meaningful conclusion. So let's get into the how of this. How do I become a great negotiator, Chris? I got you on for 20 minutes. I want to know how.
Well, you know, who could I? I could paraphrase Aaron Rodgers, you know, when he told Packer fans, I've got five words for you, R-E-L-A-X. I mean, the first moment in a negotiation that you just step back a little bit to create a little space for opportunity, that becomes a very powerful moment. And so it's really kind of creating moments of opportunity, moments for black swans to emerge. And, you know, a moment is actually interesting data. A moment's 3 seconds. If you can, at strategic moments, sit back for just 3 seconds, advantages, opportunities are going to fill those moments. And that's really kind of the first move.
Hmm. So basically, to come back and relax a little bit, to feel to take your stress level down so that you're really kind of calm when you approach the situation. That would be the first step.
Right, right. And let it come to you. I mean, once you become a practitioner of the process, it comes to you. It becomes you're sort of in a flow, and if you will, and you can see more.
Okay. So I'm calmed down now. I'm going to relax. What do I need to do next?
When you calm down a little bit, then take a slightly playful attitude, because actually our brains work up to 31% better in a positive frame of mind. So, you know, the first step is getting out of the negative mindset, because in a negative mindset, your brain is like oatmeal. It doesn't work quickly at all. And so then you kind of get yourself in a point where you don't feel threatened. You can hear more. You're centered a little more emotionally. And then actually when you become playful, you're smarter. Your brain moves faster, significantly faster. The other thing that's good about that is that it has a double effect on the other side. The other side gets in a good mood too.
Mm.
And they become smarter, and because they don't know it, but because you made them feel better, they want to cooperate with you more. And they're actually going to brainstorm internally somewhat as to something they can throw on the table that will be good for both sides. And they're going to love it because it was their idea, which makes it more likely it'll happen. I need you to talk yourself into my deal. And I need to be likable and put you in a good mood so you'll talk yourself into my deal. And that's where I'm going with it.
So a lot of books out there want you to get to yes, right? And so they always recommend, you know, you need to build them up in the mind of the person. Yes, 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 yes. So should I be asking yes questions?
Oh, I'm glad. No.
You can tell I read the book, right?
You know, and that was a great setup because you got me to say no. It's a thought-provoking when people say no. No is protection. When, you know, think about the number of times your 17-year-old said, "Dad, can I?" and the words no came out of your mouth immediately. That didn't have to do with your kid. It had to do with the nature of being a human being. As soon as somebody's trying to lead us into something, you know, the little breadcrumbs of yes that lead us to the yes bear trap, and smack it, you know, it slams on our head. So yes is commitment. Yes is where's this going? Yes is what do you want? And I literally, I had a conversation the other day with my girlfriend, and earlier in the day I'd had on a shirt that I wasn't too sure what I thought of it. And she says, oh, I really like that shirt. Because I was thinking about, you know, just getting rid of it. So she told me earlier in the day she liked the shirt. And at the end of the day, I go like, so you like this shirt, right? And she literally says to me, if I say yes, what am I committing to? And again, that's just not me and her. I mean, that's human beings. The first thing, if I try to get you to say yes, your thought is, if I say yes, what am I committing to? Which that now means you're distracted. And that means you're not listening. And so, you know, this... And there's actually a study out, they call it mirror agreement. And you know, anybody can Google mirror agreement and say, and I've had people say this, well, you know, there's an academic study that backs this up that says this is a good strategy. And my first response was, I don't care. But then I looked at the study and I thought, well, you know, no wonder they made the study back it up. I mean, you got to look at how the study's done, and it's a completely artificial environment. You know, anybody thinks getting to yes with yes is a good idea. Would you like to make more money? Would you like to have more spare time? Would you like to go on a cruise with Brad Pitt as a captain and Angelina Jolie serving you cocktails, even though I know they're no longer together? But, you know, these are traps. And everybody backs up as soon as you start to set the trap. So trying to get somebody to say yes is a horrible idea.
Right. And I think that's something that I really got from that particular chapter was the power of no, that when people use yes, there's three types of yeses, and almost all the time they're lies, right? They're just like, yes, I have time. But no not only gives the respondent a feeling of control, but no actually, again, can start the conversation. And by feeling in control, you're building an empathy, or you're building a rapport with someone, because they're like, I'm in control. So now the other thing in your book is you talk a lot about how to build empathy with the other party there. And you did it in a certain way that was really kind of counterintuitive. In fact, in your career in the FBI, it really went against the grain of some of the things that the FBI used to do. Specifically, I'm talking about, you know, the types of questions that you ask someone on the other side that lead them to start figuring out how to help you. So let's talk about some of those questions, because they're very, very powerful in that whole process that you outlined in the book.
But empathy, you want me to build empathy? I mean, how could you want me to build empathy? I want to win. That's the reaction to empathy. Like empathy has gotten to be this watered down concept by and large, where we equate it to some sort of ridiculous version of sympathy. Like if you Google the empathy images and you get this picture, you can get the empathy bear, and it's this pathetic looking bear. He looks so sad. And like somebody needs to give them a hug. So to start with, like, empathy, this is weaponized empathy. This is military grade empathy. You know, so this is not your grandma's empathy. Unless your grandma used to take a hairbrush to you and crack you over the head with it when you weren't acting right. But all right. So then that being said, what are the things that we do that breaks the relationship? And yeah, the type of question. If you get into questions, actually, each and every question that you ask is going to trigger a different emotional reaction in the other side, either positive or negative, comfort or concern. And if you say to yourself, that's interesting, I never thought about that, well, that means you're shooting off these questions and creating emotional reactions that are interfering with your conversation you don't even know you're doing. So some of it is, you know, getting out of your own way. And so besides getting people to say no instead of yes, then the next thing is stop asking people why. Mm-hmm. Why makes people defensive? Like, and that's one of the advantages. You know, what do I know as a hostage negotiator that most people don't know? Well, one of the things I know is I get a set of skills that I've actually personally road tested on every culture on the planet, which means I know that asking someone why makes Asians defensive, it makes Africans defensive, it makes Europeans defensive. There, for whatever it is, you know, when we were kids and our parents are mad at us, say, why did you do that? It's drilled into all of our heads. So you may need to know why somebody wants something. That's a legitimate strategic objective in a negotiation. But the minute you say, hey, like, why do you want that? They feel accused and they don't want to answer your question. So what do you substitute in instead of why? Because I still need to know why. Well, the word is what? You know, what makes this a good idea? What makes you want this? What made you do that? What made you decide that this was the best course of action? What makes this valuable? You know, the two power questions are either what or how. How can we proceed? How am I supposed to do that instead of saying no? You know, what and how are power questions when questions are appropriate. They're not always appropriate. That's a second problem. A lot of salespeople have said, all right, here's the problem. They've given us a list of questions to get answered. And if I can answer these get these questions answered, we'll make the sale. Any other side won't answer the questions. Well, maybe the idea is that questioning is not the way to get the information. But a lot of people don't realize that you can get information besides asking questions. And so it becomes a nuanced game of navigating the emotional minds.
Right. And this is something, again, from the book that really struck me out, is that what is really trying to get to the heart of what's important to them, because everybody has a want, right? I want $1 million from you. But what they need is fundamentally different. And the what questions get there. The how questions, though, that really blew me away in your writing, was that the how questions forces the other side to start to solve your problem, right? You talked about that scenario where every time the lady was on the phone with the kidnapper and said, well, how am I supposed to do that? You'd have to go back in the hills, right? They would have a council about it and come back. Because how really is so powerful, because now what you are doing in a very subtle way is forcing them to solve your problems for you. And that those two questions, the what's and how, again, which you detail and give great examples of in the book, are so powerful. But there was another thing in your book too, because back to the other point, because how do you get, if you're not getting your what's and how, what are the other questions that you have? Talk a little bit about mirroring and labeling, because those, I did it with my kids. I'm serious, Chris. I was sitting there reading your book and my kids were there and I was mirroring and labeling them, because every time I asked them how their day at school was, I get the fine, you know, and I was like, fine. So talk a little bit about mirroring and labeling as well. And we'll continue the conversation after this short break.
Hey, Jared Morris here. If you know anything about Rainmaker Digital and Copyblogger, you may know that we produce incredible live events. Well, some would say that we produce incredible live events as an excuse to throw great parties, but that's another story. We've got another one coming up this October in Denver. It's called Digital Commerce Summit, and it is entirely focused on giving you the smartest ways to create and sell digital products and services. To get all the details and the very best deal on tickets, head over to rainmaker.fm/summit. That's rainmaker.fm/summit.
Yeah, mirroring, and that's a subtle difference. And a lot of people say, oh, I know about mirroring. You know, I'll mirror their body language. I'll mirror their energy level. I'll mirror their affect, their tone of voice. And that is not mirroring. Mirroring is this tiny little Jedi trick, repeating the last 1 to 3 words of what somebody's just said. Or when you get to be a real show off as a Jedi, you'll pick out 1 to 3 words in the middle of what they said and you mirrored that. And there's something about that that causes the other side to go on. It's a thought connector piece. You know, my son Brandon has practiced it as a high art on me because we want to go on. And we want to reward, because most of the time, and this is another issue, when as good as what questions are, you know, what question might be inappropriate, because somebody says something to you that you don't understand and you say, what do you mean by that? You know, if you're dealing with somebody like me, I just repeat it in exact the same words, only louder. You know, that's the same way that I communicate in France. I repeat my English only louder. And of course, they understand. It's this ridiculous idea that the words that we've selected are so perfect. If we just say them again louder, the other side will get it. And in many cases, that's not what the other side needs. The other side needs you to reword it, to expand on it, to say more. And Amir will do that. You know, I don't know why. Amir flips some switch in the other person's brain every time, and it causes them to expand on it. And sometimes you got to use a strategic pause, just a moment, 3 seconds, shut the front door, and let them feel that, and they'll add to it. And it works over and over and over. It's great. I had a guy challenge me on mirrors one time, and he says, you know, what's this mirror thing? I just don't see how it would work. You know, I don't see how it would be effective to repeat what someone just said, to repeat the last three words. And I looked at him and I said, the last three words? He said, yeah, you know, I just don't, hey, wait a minute, you just got me. So, it's ridiculously simple, which scares people.
Right. Oh, trust me, it works. It works. I did it on my kids. I've done it on my wife. I mean, it is one of the very powerful things. The other thing that you talk about is labels, though, because labeling also is another one of those ways of getting the person to expand further. Because that was a big part of your negotiating tactics that you talk in the book, is letting the other side talk a lot, right? Because the more they talk, the more successful the outcome usually. And I really like those questions. It seems like, it feels like. Talk about labels for a second.
You know, and the funny thing about labels, when I first started applying hostage negotiation to business, I almost disregarded labels. I thought all the power was in the what and how questions and crafting those. And I'd actually been teaching it for a year, and one of the students made an observation about how labels affected him. And I was like, wow. And that is the most powerful, you know, it's a very fundamental thing, saying it seems like, it looks like, it feels like, it sounds like. It's an observation. And when you are a black belt level negotiator, you'll take this simple tool, the label, and use it to do extraordinary things. And it takes away, it softens up observations. It's a way to get a yes and out of someone when the and is always more important, or even a no and. And it just triggers people want to respond, because it triggers this immediate collaboration. You're in a business meeting, it's not going well, and you've got a secretary that's trying to get you out of the office, and you can say, look, it feels like we're getting blown off here. When the secretary is, in fact, trying to blow you off to get you out of there so you can't get to the boss. It's a soft way of pointing out the obvious without making the other side feel cornered. And the person who used that in a business meeting got the meeting with the CEO. Secretary said, okay, well, I'll take all your information, you know, and I'll get back to the CEO, and you know, we'll let you know what happens. And the guy immediately responds with, you know, it feels like we're being blown off here. And she's like, oh, and then she laid out a path for the meeting. And so, you know, the labels are this simple, remarkably powerful, more major deals. Here's one to close with. At the end of every deal you didn't make, it sounds like there's nothing I could say to make this deal.
Oh, wow.
And there's no downside to that. There's nothing but appreciation. And what it does, I've had like every client, every student writes that down word for word, and more deals have been pulled out of the fire and made because it can't be the first label somebody uses. It's usually about the fourth, and that's your last label. And have had the other side say, you know what? Here's what I need. And the deal was made.
Unbelievable. And
that's one of the great things about that skill.
So let's talk a little bit to kind of come to the end, because you did, when you got out of the FBI, you created the Black Swan Group, and that's blackswanltd.com. And we'll talk about that later. But what is a black swan, and what is it, and why is it so important? Because I almost felt like you went to write the book, call it Black Swan, but black swan is overly used in the financial world, certainly. What is a black swan? How does it apply in the negotiating process?
Well, it's a little thing that makes a big difference to start with. The seemingly innocuous 2 millimeter shift, slight change in what you've said, going from denying a negative to identifying a negative. I don't want you to think I'm picking on you to, I know it sounds like I'm picking on you. That's a 2 millimeter shift that creates two vastly different psychological reactions in the other side. Then the other thing of Black Swan is, which it's 2 stages to wrap your mind around this, but you know, I've got whole cards in every negotiation I'm hiding. Now, not only am I keeping this from you, but I'm keeping it from you because it's enormously valuable. And that happens in every negotiation. If it wasn't so valuable, I wouldn't be hiding it. And it's always there. So if it's true for me, then it's true for the other side. So here we have this crazy demilitarized zone, unknown space. Where do these valuable hiddens overlap? And there's no way we can predict that until we get further into the conversation. And there's no way I can research that either, because I can't research how what I'm hiding is going to affect what you're hiding. There's no reason. It has to come out of the negotiation. And those are the black swans, and those are where massively successful and valuable deals are made.
So I know that your book has lots of questions on how to reveal black swans that people can use. And I am totally cannot reiterate enough to our audience how important your book is and why they have to buy it. And I would like to conclude, though, on a actual hostage story. You tell a lot of them in the book. They're fascinating. I'd like you to give our audience or share with our audience a story of a situation that you dealt with in the FBI that really kind of encompassed all of these things, because those stories in your book, I was mesmerized. So could you share one for us, please?
There's a kidnapping in the Philippines, and we don't know it at the time, but the kidnapping is a serial killer and a lone kidnapper. And prior to dealing with this guy, I'd never heard of this sort of bad guy on the other side. Kidnappers are businesses. They're in business. They're in groups. And I got the sense early on that we were talking to the boss and not one of his reps. I never in a million years would have guessed that this guy was a sole proprietor, if you will. But he was. And, you know, we got into open-ended questions with him. We were using a lot of what and hows. And then the brother that I was coaching in the deal, because I'm really an international negotiation coach, you know, he caught on so quickly that he started compounding the open-ended questions. And one of the great ones was, you know, when we run out of money paying you daily, what's going to happen? And it was this long hesitation on the other side. And our guy, who, again, at the time, I don't know, was in fact a killer, he says, it's going to be all right. And I'm like, we got him. Bang. He just promised not to harm the hostage. Philippine police locate his hideout. They rescue the hostage. They grab this guy. And we find out that he's been kidnapping and killing in the Philippines for years. And I knew about a number of the kidnappings. I just didn't know it was this guy. And our deferential, patient approach got us a really bad guy. And the thing that I sensed why he was a boss early on is he wouldn't use a singular pronoun to save his life. There was no I, me, my. It was always we, they, them, the rest of the team. And there's a lot of research out there now that says this is exactly what influential negotiators do in the business world. When you're talking to somebody on the other side who's always deferring to people who are not there, you are talking to a massively important person who's smart enough to keep from getting cornered. And that's one of the many things that there's a direct correlation, direct connection to business negotiations, because this kidnapper was a businessman who knew he was the most important guy on his side. He was the only guy on his side, and he didn't want to get cornered. And that's a hallmark of a classic negotiator in the business world.
You know, Chris, I almost want to keep you on speed dial on my phone anytime a situation occurs, because you are just a huge wealth of knowledge and help in almost every business situation. But I know that our poor audience can't do that. So beyond going to buy the book, beyond going to Amazon and going to Never Split the Difference and buy, just go put that in the search, buy that book. It's only like $16, buy it. What else do you have to teach people how to be a better negotiator? Because I really can't tell you how I think this is such an important skill that is underrepresented. What else besides the book can our audience go and learn more about how to be a good hostage negotiator? Or business negotiator, excuse me.
I can tell you, when you're negotiating with your boss, you're being taken hostage. So that's right.
Good point.
Go to the website, blackswanltd.com, black like the color, swan like the bird with one N, LTD, like limited, blackswanltd.com. We've also got a blog, a twice a month complimentary negotiation newsletter comes out, very digestible, will come to your email. That, you know, that's free. So you can get a steady dose of negotiation advice for nothing. We've got a couple of ways to deliver lessons. We got a training coming up in New York City. I mean, this is a perishable skill, but you can get quick at it. You can get your skills up very quickly, and then it's a lot less effort to maintain them, which will help you do. So the blog, which is the edge, to give you the edge, and there's other resources on the website, blackswanltd.com, will make you better.
And I really highly encourage our audience to go check out blackswanltd.com. Those training courses are amazing. I mean, once you read the book, you are going to be addicted to this, because as Chris pointed out in the beginning, it's not that the other, you're trying to beat the other side. It's not that you're trying to get in personal with the other side. It's a situation that you're trying to resolve in a collaborative way. And the book and the training does that for you, puts you in not only the right mindset, but gives you these powerful questions. So highly recommend both the book and the site. Chris, cannot thank you enough for being on our show. Truly appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
So Jess, what did you think? I mean, I'm blown away. What is your parting thought for this entire thing? Because I have so many things that I want to go back and reread again. What is the parting thought our audience should be left with as we end this show?
I think on behalf of all of the listeners who tune into this that run their own online businesses, this is an excellent reason why every conversation with your clients, customers, readers is a win-win.
That's right. And that'll be it for members only. We'll catch you next time. Take care.